Blog Talk Radio.
Time it is. It is that time once again on a Wednesday evening. It is live. It is the 8 o'clock hour. This is the Kay Thompson Live Show. I am the person that is known as the son carrying on the tradition of my late mother, Kay Thompson, legendary radio broadcast host in the New York, New Jersey area for some 25, 30 years. And it's a pleasure to be here. So, you know, if you listen to this show and you follow us, you know that I am the one who likes the politics. My mom, not so much, because she always summed up the guy, the occupant in the White House, summed him up in a couple of words. Some of you called him, some of you heard her call him Hitler-like and other such things. And it took me a long while. Initially, I didn't think that Donald Trump was a racist, but clearly he's proven that he is, or certainly willing to use racial tactics to divide the country and to achieve his own means and his own ends. But today was really special because we had the return of Robert Mueller, the special counsel guy, they kind of built him up a lot. They built him up a whole lot. And did he deliver? I don't know. That's what we're going to talk about. Some people think he didn't. Some people think he did. But that's what we're going to get into and dissect later on today. It's interesting to me that, you know, at certain times, certain Republicans were using some of his words to support what they were saying, and they're going against it. And then they went off and were calling him all kind of names. So we're going to get into it, dissect a little bit more. I want to welcome one of our other co-hosts, Mr. Byron Saunders. He's down there in the middle of the swamp. Living down there these days. Byron, how you doing, brother?
Well, it's pouring down rain in the swamp right now. I guess it's as a result of all of the hot air that went up into the atmosphere. But I'm
That's right. Just fine.
And I had my popcorn ready. I was listening to the Cirque du Soleil, baby. That's what it was today. Full blast. But you know what, Eric? What's really important? Because it's to determine the truth and the facts, okay? And
yeah.
What's I found very, very interesting, and I'm sure we'll get into it as the show goes on, was that the Democrats came in with a game plan, and they did not hear from it. They did not get suckered into the Republicans and all the histrionics and crap that they were throwing up against the wall, and they pretty much ignored them. Republicans. It's stuck to making sure Mueller's voice and his words were the topic of the day. And I salute the Democrats for doing that, because that wasn't easy. That was very difficult for them to hold the line and then not get in the faces of the Republicans who were begging them to play the president's game.
Right. Right. I agree with you 100%. They were on track with that. I wish that they had rebutted just a couple of the lies that some of those guys tried to throw out. But let's get Wayne in here, too, see what he thinks as well. Legendary newsman, after the legendary historian and actor and playwright, but we have the legendary newsman next up, Mr. Wayne Gilman. How you doing this evening, Wayne?
I tell you, I would not have missed this for the world. I have relatives in from the left coast, and I gave up dinner tonight with them just to be here this evening. And forgive my tardiness, but I tell you, today was a defining day. You know, I mean, and the thing that really bothers me, I'm even more worried about being in the United States now with all that is going on. And the fact that this guy, Orange Man, sat up there, saw all the programming with respect to the hearings, and he comes out on the White House lawn and he says, oh, you know, we had a great day. The Republicans did well. And, you know, I was trying to figure out, I didn't watch Fox. But I'm wondering what channel he was watching that offered that kind of perception. You know, I mean, the one thing that I think that resonates with this, and I have to quote Adam Schiff with this, this man has shown disloyalty to his country. That alone, just that alone, he should be impeached.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I agree. And you know, Eric, one of the other things that stood out for me was the, as much as the first part of the today's hearing focused on the obstruction side or the collusion, not rather on the collusion side, was that one thing is certain and has to be hammered home, and that is this: Paul Manafort in the report was defined to have multiple meetings with the Russians with respect to sharing information that would be damaging to the election process. And ultimately, that's collusion. You know, it takes two to tango. That takes two to tango. And it was clear that the Russian side of this was that they interfered with our elections. They provided confusion in the process enough to swing those swing states by 1% or less. And in addition to that, the part of which Manafort was detailed in multiple meetings with the Russians for the purpose of using the Russian hack and how they intended to work on behalf of Putin. Not only is that collusion, that's treason.
But you know, they're saying that collusion isn't a term, even though that in the report he said collusion was the same thing as conspiracy. And
that's right.
The whole thing is that it's done in plain sight. And for these people to act as if it was something that was not done, and they're trying to make it, you know, something that it isn't, is tantamount, or is proof that they're willing to do whatever it takes. And Wayne, you mentioned Adam Schiff, and in that press conference that Nancy Pelosi and him and Elijah and Congressman Nadler had, you know, he said, you know, there's still an ongoing investigation in terms of what Trump's money is. And the whole thing about that was that Trump was actually trying to build Trump Moscow Tower while he was running for president, as well as a number of the people that were involved in the campaign that were making money off of various deals and various dealings while they were running this presidential campaign. And the fact that Trump came out and said what he said today, you know, that's who this guy is, and he's going to lie, and he's going to, you know, that whole kind of thing where some people who are winners never admit defeat, and that whole kind of mentality, I'm a winner, I never admit defeat, I'm never wrong. But, you know, with an individual that's proven to be wrong, proven to be a liar, what else is he going to do? He's got nothing else. And so I guess he figures on the ignorance of his base and the ignorance of really a lot of the average Americans in terms of what I mean by ignorance. I mean ignorant to the process, right? Because a lot of the pundits talked about today how some of them weren't too happy with the Democrats' approach. Some were talking about, you know, it was kind of backwards. But you have to be able, and I think Elijah Cummings said the smartest thing, the American public must pay attention. You know, Malcolm X said freedom is responsibility. So you kind of got to educate yourself. You know, it was kind of like a class. You have to, people who watch the hearings and things like that without getting bored after the first half hour, the first 20 minutes, are people that are, I mean, it's like a class, right? It's like going back to school. You're learning some stuff. It's educational TV. It's not entertainment TV. It's not all of that. So if you don't have the aptitude to want to learn, the aptitude to want to pay attention, the aptitude to want to get in the weeds about thinking something that's important to you, as important to your budget, as important to your health insurance. You know, these are all things where people have to sit down with pencil and paper and take it back to the old days when they were in grade school and do some hard studying and work. Certainly when you're picking a health insurance nowadays, or when you're going over your bank statement or your budget or your taxes, you got to get down and do that work. And it's not something that everybody likes to do or that the normal person likes to do, but you know, this is time to pay attention now. And this is time for everybody to raise their level of understanding if they really want to get to the truth. We know some people don't want to get to the truth because they rather remain in their ignorance and their hatred. But, you know, this is where we are in the country. It's a, you know, freedom is responsibility. So people need to get aware and really pay attention. attention to the facts, not the emotion.
And you know,
I
Eric,
think that really that basic. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Wayne and Eric had said, you know, the one thing that was very sobering was Adam Schiff's closing comment. He pretty much shut down Nunez. And remember, Nunez was one of the people who leaked the special committee's hearings to the White House in preparing them how to answer what was ongoing. He's one of the obstructionists. And Nunez was damn near completely not existent today.
Yeah. That's a very good observation, you know, and I was watching that because I was surprised that he had no comments at the very end. And that's why I feel that, you know, there's some pundits out there who pay attention for this to give a comment for like this for a living. And I have to say that I don't think it was even Stephen, and I'm trying to separate myself as a Democrat and just try to be like somebody who came in from Mars to analyze this thing. But I think what you said that was so salient earlier, Eric, is the fact that there's nothing sexy about this. This is not watching Empire or watching Scandal. This is not, you know, I mean, I'm glad that all the stations picked up on this for the most part. And ran it.
Which is also kind of why they misled everybody to believe to a certain degree, right? Because the I just want to jump in here to that point. You know, there were some pundits were talking about, you know, that the Democrats led everybody to believe that once Mueller comes in, the crescendo and the whole kind of, some people said you got to paint the movie or tell the story. And exactly to your point, it's not sexy. It's not like a thrilling movie to watch, right? So go ahead, Wayne.
And I agree. I mean, I'm just basically piggybacking what you said earlier. I mean, the deal is, and then on top of that, Robert Mueller was not the greatest witness to bring forth, but he was the only person that could tell this story, that could paint the picture. And he picked up in the afternoon, but, you know, I myself said, ooh, I don't know how this is looking in the morning. And he wanted to be politically expedient in terms of what his role was. But as time went on, and I guess as people started hitting him left and right, you know, it started becoming apparent. And, you know, I just think it's compelling that every American should read the Mueller report because there's so much stuff in there, you know, that shows how much damage this man has done. And I also think that there should be laws in place for people like him, once it is pointed out that they have done something to basically go against the very fabric of what America is all about, he should be stripped of his role. He should be, you know, I know this system is effective because it's one of checks and balances, but one thing Mueller said at the evening hearing this afternoon, that the electoral process is never going to be the same again without some interference like this. And it's unfortunate. But, you know, as you said earlier, and I know Byron, you had mentioned this before, that, you know, these people still have their tentacles involved in what we're doing here. And,
of course.
And that is what's most troubling. And the fact of the matter is that they're counting on the ignorance of the basic flyover states where they're more concerned about digging coal than trying to improve the environment. Those people who are not going to sit down and watch TV and pay attention to a hearing like this and understand what it's all about, they just figure, well, you know, Trump is being Trump and this is the only way he has to be. You know, Not to step away from what we're talking about, but I was watching a news piece locally with Rudolph Giuliani, Trump's armchair quarterback, whenever he doesn't want to face the press. And there was, in recent days, this incident here in New York. I don't know if you're familiar with it, Byron, but there were cops in both Harlem and Brooklyn who were attacked by...
Which is something I want to get into a little bit, but let's...
Yeah, no, but my point is that they bring Giuliani on, and right away he's talking about the progressives in our society. And what the progressives, and when I was mayor, all this stuff didn't happen because I held a firm hand. I was conservative, and I was far more effective with the police department. But his behavior is what spawned this divisiveness that we're going through now, not just locally, but he has catapulted this issue across the country with having to take this status is, you know, what we say goes, regardless of what the laws may be, and that's it, you know. And it just, you know, we have so much to undo in just 2 years that we can't afford another four. We can't afford another 2 years again, you know.
That's right.
What bothers me. We got it, and I think the press has to be far more aggressive about checking this man at news conferences and doing things that's in the expediency of America, not just one party, but America.
Well, that leads me to a question that I wanted to get to ask you, and I'm going to ask it now. As a former newsman, as someone who's considered himself still the mentality of a newsman, how would you have approached it? I mean, were you in the press pool now, the presidential pool or the pool down there? What do you think I want you to elaborate on what type of things you think the press should have followed up on, what things you think they missed. What's your assessment in terms of the press coverage and questions?
Yeah, I understand where you're going. And I tell you, back in the day, you know, we used to have something very effective. Like we would, you know, your mom and I and the other broadcasters at both stations, if there was a hot button issue that basically offended our listenership, we would go on the air. We would give out the telephone numbers to the local elected officials, whether they were in New York or in Washington or if they were in other parts of the country, stirring stuff that really was irrelevant. And we would basically have all of our supporters go out and call these, you know, jam the phone lines to get the point across. And, I mean, even though that might be somewhat archaic and a lot of people have done that, it's still effective. But what's more is that if you're a member of the White House press corps and you hear things that you know for a fact is not factual, and you have to challenge him every time on every course, no matter what hostility that might be spawned by that. I give April Ryan credit, but it shouldn't just be April Ryan alone. It should be everybody involved with this. You know, I had a problem with ESPN the other day because one of the sports shows I watch in the morning, they spanked the guy. They want to suspend him because he's talked about the level of racism and drew a picture, a correlation between what Trump's message was to the squad, and how it is also impacts upon the world of sports. But they got this policy there that unless it's not related to sports, they don't want to talk about it. And I tell you, there should be a campaign to see to it that this man, white guy, can't think of his name, I can see his face down, Letard or LeBron, and the deal is that he shouldn't lose his job behind something as important as that. Everybody was offended. Everyone of good conscience was offended by what the president said. You know,
that's exactly it.
This is why
that's
we take a knee. This is, you know. Go ahead.
And that's
I'm sorry.
Exactly it, Wayne. People, Americans of good conscience, right? Righteous people. It's not a white and black thing. It's never been that way. It's been that's been the way that we've been separated and differentiated into racism. But even you dealing back to slavery times, you had white individuals who were like, "Yo, this is crazy. We don't make people slaves. You can't do that."
Uh-huh.
So I mean, you know, and ESPN. I mean, we could get off into a whole conversation about how it was off of the backs of the black announcers that blew ESPN up to the conglomerate status it is, how it was Stuart Scott who made ESPN cool at first when he would talk, you know, if you guys remember when Stuart Scott was on and he would do his commentaries on the show and add a little bit of flavor, he was the one who made ESPN cool. He was the one who made a lot of the black athletes want to respond in the way. So, I mean, we can get off into a whole – that's a whole nother conversation that we can get into, right? But getting back to the White House press corps, what you're saying, that's why they stopped doing their daily press briefs, right? Because the new press person that took over for Sanders, she hasn't had any press briefings at all. So, I mean, that's why they stopped doing it, because they were getting hammered with those questions. And let me just say something, and I want to get you in on this, Byron, too. You know, what I saw this morning was that Robert Mueller is an older man. They said he's going to be 75 next week. So some of that fire that people said the last time he testified in front of Congress was 6 years ago, you know, some of that fire and that kind of, you know, G-man vibe was lost a little bit. And plus, he didn't want to be there. And he's hearing was 4 hours, right? I nodded out a little bit. It was going on so long, trying to pay attention. And the second hearing was, what, another 2.5 hours. So he was getting that's a long day, and that's a lot of work for a guy like that.
74-year-old,
you know,
a
gentleman of his age and all the work he was putting in. So they talked about wanting to, you know, some people mentioned wanting him to be more forceful in his rebuttal and that he wasn't in terms of defending his work. But I think that in a way, as I was thinking about it, as he kept it cool and said, I concur with what's in the report, is that he was trying not to show any type of partisanship, you know? So he's trying to encourage Congress and the members of Congress to do their work and to paint the picture for the American people. You know, I have a friend of mine, and we're talking about he's interested in doing some sort of public service program to educate our community. And we talk about how the various levels and steps we have to go through to educating the average person out here on the street and letting them know, A, this is how the process, you know, give them a primer course first. 101. This is how it directly affects you. Then that is connected to this, and this is connected to that. But you have to start with the knowledge with the assumption that people don't know what you're talking about, that they have no clue, because the average American really doesn't understand the intricacies. I mean, we're guys that pay attention, and we still have to really kind of brush up on the things we know. We're constantly learning. So, that's what the Democrats need to do more forcefully, I do believe, you know. And I would have liked, I know they had a script that they had to stick to and build a case, and each person built upon the previous person's questioning. But when those guys on the other side would just make stuff up, I would have liked to see at least, you know, a 30-second or a 10-second, just a rebuttal of the lie that they just told, or the mischaracterizations, like the guy who said the Democrats and the socialists on that side, and, you know, Trump is not innocent until proven guilty. One last thing I want to say in this particular session is that they talked about, you know, he's not above the law, but he's not below the law. But you know what? The president of the United States should be held to a higher standard. I don't care. You should be held to a higher standard. If you want a position like that, if you're an elected official, you got to be held to a higher standard. And that's the way I was raised. That's the way my uncle and my father conducted themselves in public office. They always tried to be beyond reproach, and were beyond reproach, where there were not even any kind of inklings of unethical stuff. And people that have followed politics in Newark can point to the various people who have served in public service that did get caught up in some things here or there. But I guarantee you, and you'd be hard-pressed to find Donald Payne Sr. or William D. Payne or Craig Stanley or any of my family that has chosen to serve get caught up in anything like that, because honesty and integrity was something that was always stressed to us growing up, as to a great many of us in our community growing up. So, Byron, you want to jump in there on that?
Absolutely, because the standard of excellence is about being ethically above and beyond reproach. And unfortunately, the lowest common denominator that's sitting in the office right now is lower than scum dung, okay? Because his concept is based in thuggery. He is a grifter. He is a charlatan. He is a person who has bankrupted every one of his businesses. And once again, the notion that he's putting on what they say the goodness of the economy, well, that's based on somebody who's cooking the books. They're not jobs that are out here that are of $25, $30 an hour. These are jobs that they want to keep below minimum wage.
That's
so
right.
How do you say you're running on the economy when you just created a $1 trillion deficit because of your tax cuts? Come on. Wake up, America.
That's right.
This is the grifter who's shilling out to you the three-card Monty game every single day. You know, and so at some point the press has to stop, and this is where the media has a responsibility, Wayne, is that the press, the Fourth Estate, must get in his face and call him
exactly out
a liar. Not the day after, the day he utters it while they're in his face with a microphone and say to you, "You're lying, Mr. President."
Thank you.
We can
That's
prove
right.
it.
Even if we have to replay the videotape.
Well, I mean, there was, we're talking about like a Jim Acosta was one such reporter, and there was another
yeah.
guy that he was going back where, and you know, they couldn't revoke everybody's press pass to the White House. Remember, they did that for a minute. But I guess it got to be too much where all of the reporters, so they just stopped having to press things. And also, you mentioned three-card Monty, right? You know how that game gets
yeah.
everybody's attention. Dude, when you're walking down the street, those cats are always real loud with it, right? Come win the money, come do this. And just like Trump, he's real loud in his denials, you know, real loud and no obstruction, no, even the way he types in his Twitter, all caps. Right? So, you know, that's the carnival barker. You talked about the Charlotte and the con man, you know, and various other names that we want to call him. You know, I think he's one of the most despicable, not even president, kind of human beings. And I didn't have this, you guys know, early on, I didn't have this impression of Donald Trump. I thought I was like, he's doing what he needs to do, yada, yada. But this guy really is doing things beyond the pale of integrity for that office. And the fact that there's
but
a certain number of Americans.
There.
Right, exactly.
Eric, it's always
exactly.
been there. I mean, not to cut you off, but I mean, that's the thing that I find most despicable about that, because America does not know his history because it's been really confined to the tri-state area here.
To our
anyone
area,
anyone
yeah.
taking the time. You know who I wish was still alive? And Byron, you probably knew Wayne Barrett of the Village Voice. Barrett used to... Oh, please, this guy would tear Donald Trump's behind apart. Whiteboard. Progressive.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I mean he probably is turning in his grave hearing and seeing what's going on now, you know? Because he laid out the blueprint years ago. And the thing is that, you know, this attitude, like the way I saw him during the White House press briefing this afternoon, it reminded me of Roy Cohen. You know, it reminded
yeah.
me of you know, just repeating the lie. It like Hitler's guy. You know, it is so obvious to the average person who has studied him, and it's
right.
just unfortunate that there's so many Americans who are caught up in their daily routines, and this is where we're vulnerable to people, to places like Russia, probably North Korea, and all the others that want to get their tentacles in here to change the system. You know, we are so caught up in our day-to-day activities. I was just surprised to find out this afternoon that the former FBI, the leading black that was in charge of some department within the confines of the FBI, Malcolm Nance, had reported that this whole vaccine issue, where they're trying to discourage people from taking vaccines to prevent, you know, shingles and smallpox
mm-hmm.
and measles, the Russians are behind that. He has found a nexus to that with regard to his investigations as to what's going on with their infiltration in our system. So, you know, we have got to be far more astute, far more involved, far more versed in what it is that we're about to keep our image, you know, the way it should be. You know, and it's just crazy, man. It saddens
yeah.
me to think that we have to go through this. you know, at this level, and to think that there's so many people who are still vulnerable out there. I mean, there's no excuse this time. We've already paid a price. We have to have
right.
a landslide victory.
You know, it's almost
certain, is that the level of the depth of the involvement of not just the president, but his entire administration and the GOP. You see, because this is, remember this, still the hearings did not, from the Democrats reading from the report, they still did not have the unredacted report to read from. They didn't name
exactly.
names. That's what I'm talking about, because if they name the names that are redacted, it goes up the entire GOP food chain.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And that's what the financial aspect comes in. Remember that Nancy Pelosi said there's still some financial investigations that are ongoing. So they're trying to, like you've been saying all the time, Byron, follow the money. So that's why Mueller didn't answer a lot of questions, because there's still ongoing investigations, even though they tried to couch it and paint it as if it was incomplete, that you drew the inference that, you know, well, you didn't exonerate him, but if someone is proven innocent until proven guilty and all that, and saying all that stuff when in the very previous sentence or the person's previous statement, it was stated, or Mueller himself stated, that you can't indict a sitting president. So, you know, that's why we didn't consider that. But here these guys come, and that's an old, you know, for them to say the exact opposite of what they're doing, or to accuse the Democrats the exactly what they're doing, is an old Karl Rove playbook, right? If you remember back in the day, that's what he used to do on Fox. We'd get on Fox and accuse the Democrats exactly of what him and Cheney and Bush and those guys were doing, right? So, I mean, that's to be quite honest, that's an old criminal playbook, right? The basic criminal is going to accuse somebody, another person, of doing exactly of what they're doing. So, I mean, any person that has a reasonable way of thinking can see that. And I've always been, and I guess all three of us have always been bewildered by the fact that this guy is an obvious liar and con man, and not to mention a braggart, and how you can sit there and listen to this guy for any longer than 5 minutes without just getting, you know, if he's not on TV, if he wasn't on The Apprentice, why are you listening to this man?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you putting any credit into what he's saying? And it's a comment about our love of money in this country, right? How much we worship wealth. Because the whole thing about Donald Trump and his whole mystique and lie and fabrication of who he was about the money, and that's why everybody voted for him. Another thing, I want to move to something, ask you guys. You know, to me, when all this stuff, when he attacked the congresswomen last week and just all of his actions, is it just me, or does it seem like all of the Democratic candidates have been surprisingly quiet in terms of jumping on him going after, quote, the squad, and also his reactions? I mean, do you guys think that they've been – because if I was a presidential candidate, instead of going after each other or some going after Joe Biden, as soon as the Republican said, as soon as the president says stuff like that, I'm going to jump on him for attacking these women of color. And I don't know. Maybe I haven't been paying attention. I would at least expect Kamala to jump out and jump on him just like she jumped on Joe Biden. You know, and normally she does, but there's a lot of – I don't know. Have you guys heard anything? Any you know, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of opportunity to be on talking shows and to get your message out, to talk about this is exactly why we need to get this man out of office. And I have seen no Democratic candidates making noise like that. Have you guys?
I still wanted to, but, you know, I think what you're saying, that the level of vitriol that people had a reaction, a public reaction to right after he came out with his malicious tweet, I didn't hear the hysteria that should have been there. And
exactly.
I think you're absolutely right. I think – I know Democrats closed ranks. This is where it backfired on his ass, because the deal is that all of them, a lot – even the ones that are not running came out and said, you know, this is unacceptable regardless of what your feelings are. And then he took criticism from his own family for having said what he said. You know, I
allegedly.
Mean, Ivanka said something, and
I don't think she really said
but
it.
Her husband
but
as well.
I think allegedly that he took criticism. I don't. I think they could care less, other than the fact that it makes them look good to say something, and maybe it makes at least one of them look like the sane member of the family. But I don't think they really. You know,
no,
I don't think they care,
but they saw the divisiveness in what he did was wrong. He acted like as if he tried to quell the crowd from saying things, and, you know, 13 seconds go by and he's back into his vitriol. You know, the problem with him is that, as you said, that, you know, one of my sisters has this expression of calling people bottom feeders because they're like scavengers, and they just rise to only a certain level. Donald Trump is a bottom feeder. You know, regardless of what meat you throw out, he's going to come at you and figure out a way to get around and to make himself look good in the process. And I think the thing that just really bothers me is that you're right. Not enough of us, and the news cycles change so quickly, and I still think there's some people on the periphery of the Democratic Party who are not in lockstep with what the squad represents, and I think that is the issue. But as far as I'm concerned, that is our future. All four
right.
of those women
well,
represent
I
our
know.
Future.
I don't
but
know about.
I
mean, I don't know if I would agree with that, but I certainly agree with that. They should have come out. I would have liked to hear. You don't have to agree with the squad or buy into that whole that whole kind of a lot of the publicity they're getting for. Let me because I don't know how much they really are doing. And from like I said to you before, I've related to you guys before, that some of the actions that were being taken by a couple of the members, at least one. You know, the golden our AOC was a little bit against some of the other members, you know, and some of the Black Caucus members, and to me, you know, a lot of stuff was done on our backs in this country, and so when you come out attacking members like that, and I don't know exactly what I could just know by the inside information I have, it makes me kind of like, okay, calm down. I know everybody's putting a lot on your shoulders and giving you a lot of accolades. But just calm down and earn it first. And like I said, to me, it seemed like some of them at least were reveling in the notoriety. You know, when you get elected to office, there's a lot of notoriety and a certain amount of celebrity that I've seen a lot of people go through and get. It's like Hollywood in that respect. They get big swelled heads and they start believing, like the public enemies would say, they would believe the hype. You know, we used to say that back in the day. And some of them believe the hype. But regardless of all of that, put all of that aside. He should not have attacked those women like that because, like you said, they are productive members of the party. They're making the party deal with things, and they're raising some issues that causes some people in the party to think. And the party should have come around. Certainly the presidential candidates should have used – that would have been a great moment for an individual like a Barack Obama or somebody to say, this is not what we're about, United States. We don't do this.
I think you're getting ready to see an outpouring of – commentary from the candidates as they strategically awaited today's event. And here's the reason why. To have been ahead of it would have taken focus away from what will be one of the questions asked by the candidates in the forum for which they'll have a chance to either stand with the current House representatives who won by acclamation overwhelmingly in the 2018 midterm elections. Those 100 women did not get in there as a result of white males and
That's
their
right.
votes. This women who put them in there, Black women who put them in
there. I was
going to
say, who's the largest?
Black
That's
men.
Right. The largest. And Black men, but the largest, when we're talking
and
about those 100
men,
women getting
right.
in there, the largest percentage of the group that helped to put that 100 women in there were the Black women, right? And the Black men, as Wayne said.
One thing is certain, the Russian attack, and I'll say this, I've been saying this for quite some time, the Russian hacking into the 2016 election process was targeting African-American voters. It is proven
sure.
in the report. It was proven by the fact that in every one of the swing states, the low turnout of black votes was the critical difference. And it's not that now admitting it and acknowledging race as a factor is one of those kind of things that is plausible deniability. And the GOP played that. Who was going to blame them for playing the race card? Okay, but the Mueller report and the Justice Department report itself, as well as the 17 other agencies, have clearly identified the Russian attack addressed the whole entire notion of upsetting and keeping black people from coming to the polls, and they're playing that same card right now as we speak.
Well, that was a part of the Republican operative that passed away, and his daughter was going through his stuff and found that whole exact game plan written out that to suppress the vote, suppress minorities from voting. So that's part of their game plan to keep us from trying to vote.
Right.
You know, the Russians, that was part of what the Russians were proving to do. Go ahead.
That's right, and this is why the attack right now, there was an editorial piece in the Washington Post this past weekend that indicated that the very same plan that they used then in terms of addressing the attack and the focus of the African-American community is the very same game plan that they're using right now, which is why Trump is attacking those four women. It's specifically outlined in their whole profile, and when they were when the GOP got together this weekend to figure out how to address Trump's attack of the four women, it was critically analyzed that the GOP intentionally used bona fide phrases that would make it appear as if they were socialists, that they were communists, that they were to go back to where they came from, and they knew strategically exactly what they were doing. And if you look at what the GOP did today in the Mueller investigation, there wasn't a single GOP person who asked a question relative to obstruction of justice or the Russian hack as an attack of our system. They specifically went after Mueller and his integrity of his team. Now, that's just
I personally believe, Byron, and I might have said this before, that I think the Republican Party would rather bring this country to its knees. I think it's just about they have latched on to Trump as their great white hope, the last chance of maintaining, you know, the old characteristics of what America represented prior to the civil rights movement and all that. They want to turn the clock because they see what's going on. They know that the process is changing. And, Eric, I know, and maybe this is the discussion off mic, I know that you are probably privy to some empirical information that I'm not aware of. But I can tell you, honest to God, I even watched this past weekend, you know, maybe I have a mental sapiosexual relationship with AOC in my mind, but I think this girl is honest. You know, I know that she's had to ruffle some feathers, and I saw her at Al Sharpton's convention, and I didn't get the distinct impression at all, you know, because she calls it as it is. And the thing is, I know there were some issues with Nancy Pelosi in the beginning, but even they have come together full circle. Nancy has closed the ranks. And there are a lot of people out there, you know, and I'm not saying I look at what John Conyers did all that time, you know, and it bothers me that here's the man, even Al Franken is another story, but Charlie Rangel, you know, you get to a certain position, and again, this is why the Payne brothers will go down in the history books, because there was a certain standard and ethic. And I ain't saying that because you're on the phone. I'm just telling you, as history sees for itself, what has gone on. But the bottom line is, it seems like whenever we get to the point of a position of power, you know, there is something in our file that and I'm not saying that perhaps, you know, power corrupts, and maybe you might have had to do some things to offend people to get to where they are. But, I mean, the deal is that, you know, I don't think this would ever happen to a Barack Obama. I would be astounded if they find something on him, you know? And
well,
I think this is what America needs now.
His presidency, there was no scandals. The whole thing about his presidency, no scandals, none of that whatsoever with Obama.
Exactly.
I mean, the last presidencies. And, you know, I don't think it's as sweeping as that. I think it's human nature. See, that's where the human nature aspect comes in. I don't think it's indicative to our people or race. I think it's at a certain point, certain individuals, being humans, they get caught up in various things. Some get caught up in the greed. Some don't have the honesty. But for whatever reason, I think that's a human nature characteristic rather than, you know, the old kind of thing is like whenever our people get some, we always mess it up or whatever. As far as AOC concerned, I'm not mad at her. I like everything she's done. I just was peeping at Hal a little bit, and whichever those guys referred to Nancy Pelosi's stuff as being racist or the way she reacted, I can't tell how somebody felt, but I just know how she's worked with the caucus and with many members.
Oh, yeah.
Representative Clay, who said, come on, you can't call Nancy Pelosi racist. And I know personally that she worked a lot with my uncle and respected my uncle a great deal. And he was a guy who could cross aisles. But I don't think in terms of working with Nancy Pelosi, there was never any inklings of that I've heard in passing or in conversations that she was like that. So to try to throw that out there, And I'm not saying that you know, I haven't read the statement and haven't heard it from one of their mouths, so it could potentially have been somebody else said that statement and applied it to one of them. I think that's a possibility, too. I don't put anything past a lot of these people. But, you know, we got about 13 minutes left to go, guys. I want to talk about what you touched about, Wayne, was the situation with the police officers in New York City getting water poured on them and all of that. You know, just from watching the clips, to me, you know, I'm anti-bad cop. I'm not anti-cop, right? I'm not anti-law and order. I'm anti-people who don't apply law and order equally. And I don't know the full context of those videos, but certainly what I saw, you know, at least the two cops walking away and the guy dumped a bucket of water on their heads, that was disrespectful.
And
them just walking away and really, because, you know, in certain states, that ain't going to go down. And certain types of cops, you know, I think I couldn't exactly make out the ethnicity of that particular police officer that was walking away. He looked to me to be of Asian descent or of non-white descent. But you know, in certain other areas of the country where they're going to look more European, you're not even going to try it. Where they are more apt, perhaps, depending on the individual, more apt to brutalize people, to shoot people. You know, that's something that you're like, wow, these guys are really bold with it. You know, and certainly I understand the frustration that many of us face, particularly against racist cops and people who treat us a certain way. But I'm just wondering, what's the full context? Why? How did they come to the point where they were throwing water on these police officers? So, you know... Go ahead.
I think, not to cut you off, I think they were trying to exercise a certain amount of restraint, but I also think that sent a message to other people who are going to sit there and watch that on TV over and over, or YouTube or what have you, and say, well, if they could do that, and they walked away, you know, because, again, this is on the heels of the Eric Garner decision.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of tension out here, but I think that some of our black elected officials, especially those who worked in law enforcement, like the borough president of Brooklyn, you know, Eric Adams, they need to be more vocal about that because these guys know what it's like to walk that beat, you know.
Right,
and
sure.
A lot of us have never had to draw a gun, and maybe, you know, I know it was like 100 degrees the day it happened, but still... It's disrespectful. If I'm not mistaken, one cop had a bucket thrown at his head. You know, with
hit him in the head with the bucket.
You know,
I saw that. Yeah, and they were arresting somebody. So, like I said, I don't know what the context was, but especially in that particular one where the cop got hit in the head with the bucket, he was arresting somebody and they had somebody leaning over the hood. But to me, the two cops that were just walking away and somebody walked up behind and they were already drenched. They were walking away, and somebody just walked up behind the one that was trailing behind and just dumped water an entire bucket on his head. I'm just wondering, what caused you guys to do that? What caused that to happen where this even occurs? And then you had the guy on the subway who was up in the police officer's face, you know, talking to them all. You know, I don't have occasion. I haven't had occasion to jump up in a cop's face. You know, I've had disagreements with them. You know,
yeah.
But I'm just wondering what caused that type of outrage, whether it was justified or whatever. And I, when somebody's walking away from an encounter, you kind of wonder, well, who's the aggressor then? Because you were walking up behind this guy, dumping water on him. So really, who's the aggressor? So
right,
it just caused me to wonder what happened that this had to happen. But I certainly think it's disrespectful to do that to police officers, because all cops aren't bad, you know, white, black, or whatever. All white cops
mm-hmm.
don't hate all black people. So
thank
you know,
you.
It's just, but the criminal justice system that they've had to been dealt with, that they have to deal with, has been one of structural racism, right, within the United States. That it was designed initially to, you know, obviously it was against the law for black people to be free. So the cops
right.
were the ones to go capture the black people and bring them back. So if you realize in that, taking that into account, the system was designed to a certain degree to get the other, to get the
aimed
most obvious
us.
Other, which is us. So I don't
yeah.
know if you got a quick
aimed
comment on
us.
That, Byron. I just want to.
Well, here's my take on it. And I'm going to take it one step beyond, which I find extremely frightening. And that part of it is this. As you have just indicated about the Justice Department, the justice system, and the inequality of the application of the justice system, which largely targets African Americans, and we all know who are the majority of the people in prison, who's there for committed crimes, that are felonies or misdemeanors. We're the ones who pay the price more than anybody else, and with the specific target of the hashtag Black Lives Matter movement, understanding that it was created because of Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin. I mean,
mm-hmm.
these were moments in which the Justice Department, the Police Department, and deputized Zimmerman as a watchdog for the community, arbitrarily became judge, jury, and executioner. And so the scary part of what we just witnessed was that at some point, how do we hold back the frustration of those who figure that if, you know, my dumping water
Go ahead.
For the Al-Qaeda death squads. No, understand this. There's a point in which you push a man too far, man, woman, beyond their breaking point. And we are at that point again, fellas. This is the summer. You've been watching what's been going on all across America. You know, the Becky Sue calling out for people, you know, the targeting and the profiling. And you know what? The frustration is at a level where that's mild to what could potentially be in the coming background when, as a result of an officer duly making an arrest, duly engaging in providing his paid-for service to protect and serve, at some point, some squad, and I hate to say it, because if you can allow somebody to come dump some water on it, what's to keep a death squad from coming up from behind a cop who's making a warranted arrest and then somebody putting a bullet in his head? That's the scary
That's right.
part.
Yeah.
That's the elephant in the room.
Yeah. And how do you quell that? How do you stop that?
That's right. How do you stop it? Because at the point of which, yeah, because then you can't. I mean, the justification of it is wrong, absolutely wrong, for pouring the water or anything else. But you have cops standing on top of a car in Cleveland, two cops unloading 178 bullets in unarmed people in a car only because they were stopping them?
Yeah.
And those cops just got rehired. They just got
and then you
rehired.
Then you got a president who says all this racist, crazy stuff, who just amps up everything, who doesn't try to bring down the temperature, right?
That's exactly right. And so we come to a crossroads, folks, and I really, in my pray every day that we don't go to that level, because that visual was very scary.
Mm-hmm. It was. And the thing is, what I find even scarier is that some department head already berated them for their behavior, for exercising restraint.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
That I think, is even scarier. Because what could have happened if they pulled out their guns and shot, and with justification? You're attacking me, I'm law enforcement.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Right. And I feared for my life because I was getting washed with water. Come on now, guys. We've seen this scenario play out from the opposite end. You know, Fernando Castillo was telling, I got a gun in the gov compartment. Did not pull it out.
Right.
The officer, bang, 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 bang. Just like
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
God almighty, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's something that, you know, like you said, people get to that frustration and breaking point. And it's almost like that kamikaze thing. I mean, you mentioned briefly. I heard the connection dropped out, but I heard you briefly mention Al Qaeda or whatever. But for someone to want to be a suicide anything, and to say I'm willing to die just as long as I take you out, there must be a really deep seated hatred for that other person, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to take my life just as long as I take yours. You know,
Eric, you had a president the other day go after those four congresspersons, and they immediately had to arrest someone who said that there was a bullet in the chamber for the congressman Ilmar? Come on
now.
Yeah.
And the police officer said that AOC deserves a round and not the one, she served. So, I mean, you know,
that's right. So,
that was a couple days before the cops, they were dumping water on the guy. So, you know,
exactly.
I mean, it just perpetuates itself. Really briefly before we go, I've got like 3 minutes. What do you guys think about, you guys heard about the Wyoming Valley School District in Pennsylvania that was lunch shaming parents and really doing it, taking aim at the kids more so, and sent home some sort of note saying, you know, kids could end up in foster care. And most recently, if you watched the news tonight, there was a self-made millionaire, a guy who grew up poor like that, white dude, grew up on public assistance, did whatever, built his coffee business up to where he's a successful millionaire, and he offered to pay this bill of about $22,000 to the district for these kids. And the district refused his payment. He said he was hung up on, actually. Couldn't even get anywhere. So this whole lunch-shaming thing because parents owe money to the school and they're going to use the kids is kind of – what do you think? I think that's ridiculous, and I don't know who's running the Wyoming Valley School District in Pennsylvania, but they seem like a jackass to me. Go ahead, Byron, say
it again. Here's my take on the entire thing. If you are – an elected official, the five things you're responsible for doing and protecting and caring for your community and your citizens is to make sure the hungry are fed, the naked are clothed, the homeless are sheltered, the sick are healed, and you give hope to the hopeless. Now, that representative of that school district who intends to be criminalized these young people as a result of not paying their tab is part of the problem that we have in this country today. We got leaders out here who are wannabe leaders. They don't give a damn about whether you're hungry, naked, homeless, healthy, or hopeless. They
it's
need
about
to be
the power.
From office.
Right.
I agree. No, I mean, I'm not familiar with the story, but I agree with everything Byron said. You know, it's unfortunate because we're living in a day now where we have to give money. Some teachers I know come out of their pocket to pay for supplies for students, you know? And
you're going to
what happened to the money that you're collecting from Lotto that's supposed to go towards education? What
Thank
is
you.
That money going to? You got people buying and engaging in gambling and getting addicted to just like it's an opioid. You know, where's the crime and debt? We got to stop and understand we're creating systems that are engaging in making people commit criminal acts. And
that's
as long
word.
As we
gotta go.
To do that, that's, well, anyway, peace and love always.
All right, Byron Saunders. Thank you, brother. 30 seconds. Thank you, brother Byron. We'll talk to you again next week. Brother Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. Give the people your sign off, my brother.
All I got to say this week, I hope Donald Trump does not pardon Bernie Madoff. That's it.
All right, Wayne. We'll talk to you again next week. Thank you, my brother. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show, another lively show, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank you for listening in. My name is Citizen Payne. Thanks to once again to my mom. I love you, Mom. Listen to us again next week. This is the Kay Thompson Live Show, 8 to 9 p.m. live every Wednesday, and we are archived. Take care. See you again next week.